you? Don't watch that. Watch this. This is the heavy, heavy monster sound. The nuttiest sound around. So if you're coming off the street and you're beginning to feel the heat, well, listen, Buster, you better start to move your feet to the rockin'est, rock-steady beat of madness. One step beyond!
Welcome to Dynamo's Half Dozen, the show we will bring you each and every single week where nothing is off limits. And we also never forget the madness. But most importantly, never forget the talc. This is Dynamo's Half Dozen Still. So welcome, lads, to the third episode now of Dynamo's Half Dozen. We've got Ted, obviously the co-host. We've got Niall Hogan. Welcome back, Niall. Once again, it feels like I'm talking to you every second or third week. And then we have a long-lost alumni of Dynamo's Dozen. Damien Gerrard has made a return with his very fancy microphone. How are you?
I'm not bad. It's good to be back as the token United fan.
Well, you're not, yeah. There's two of you now.
Is there two of us?
There's two of you. You and Ted are both United fans, just to give people a little
rundown. But Ted's probably a real fan who lets it bother him.
No, I don't think so. We're going to get into that, but a rundown first and foremost of what this episode is going to be about. It's just going to be a little bit of banter about pre-season as we get close now to the kick-off of the Premier League season and just football season in general. And obviously, the amazingly active transfer window that we've had so far as well. Lads, welcome. Let's try and make some sort of sense out of all this, but have fun along the way. As I said, the amazingly active transfer window. It's obviously not quite accurate, what I said there.
Yeah, there's been a lot of paper talk. It's really active in the papers, just actual signings are quite lackluster.
I think we're having a season, a pre-season from FIFA Career Manager. It's like we're linked with everybody, we're throwing bids in for everybody, then we get rejected, and then we say, listen, we weren't in for them at all. It's like somebody at a bar, you're trying to chat someone up, whether you're a girl or a boy, and then you say, well, I wasn't interested anyway. That's Manchester United's pre-season.
That's actually a very good point.
It was such a brilliant week, actually, because Woodward came back off holidays yesterday. And all the United fans were so excited about all these players they were going to sign. And then Woodward just turned around and said, we're not in for any of these.
Do you know what? Woodward came back from Thailand for a week from leaving his load and a load of little fucking tiny things over there and didn't even realise, thought he got away with it. Came back fucking empty and realised, bollocks, straight back to this shit. He's a dickhead, that lad.
Came back with a jet load of Jisung Parks, hopefully.
Yeah, probably, yeah, man. If he went for the reach around, definitely he'd keep going. 100% if he felt cock and balls. That's a fact.
Jesus, Sam.
Yeah, this is where we're going with this today. No, Jesus has nothing to do with it. Jesus plays
I think he's been a very successful...
Jesus plays for the real... Jesus plays for the real Manchester. In blue.
I don't know if he plays. He gets thrown out there every couple of games. Doesn't really get a run out with them at all.
He does, yeah.
He scores every time.
Yeah, he's got the number 9 shirt. He's been handed the number 9 shirt this year. And he's only 20.
He didn't play.
Still better than Lukaku.
Yeah. Well, not hard.
I'm only messing, lad.
I spent half this week fucking defending Lukaku, and United fans were going to spare at me.
I want him to stay. I definitely want Lukaku to stay. I think he's an option, and particularly with the quality of the crosses we'll have coming in from Dan James and Aaron Wan-Bissaka on the right. I think that
Dan James in the Carabao Cup. Is Dan James a starter now?
100%.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough.
Every game.
After the pre-season he's had, he's the first name on the sheet, I'd say.
Is he, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's had a whopper pre-season. His name doesn't pop up that much in terms of, you know, he's probably not going to score us a whole lot of goals, and assists probably aren't going to be that high.
Yeah.
But his pace is so, he's so fast that he is going to pick up so many free kicks for United. And I know people don't think that's a huge deal. Oh, you got a free kick, it doesn't really matter. But if you keep fouling that guy, you're going to pick up a yellow. And when you pick up that yellow, you now have to change your game because you can't be going in on those tackles anymore. And a defender on a yellow card being like that, that can change a game because they now have to be that little bit more careful about any tackle they put in.
Yeah. Well, if he's good, he's good.
How'd you feel, Ted, about your pre-season so far? It looks really good.
It's been a really good, I've watched two of the four games. Two of them were on midweek, so I can't watch them while I'm in work. But I've watched the highlights of them. And people have looked good. Obviously, the first game you're against, we're against Perth. So we should look good against them. Leeds, you should look quite decent against. But we looked good against Spurs today as well. And that wasn't a half-team Spurs, that was their full-strength squad, really.
I watched that match myself, actually, Ted, today. I was actually very impressed with United. I wasn't very impressed with fucking dirty Spurs trying to lay some heavy tackles in pre-season, to be fair.
There was, yeah. I don't think Sissoko got the message of it being a friendly game. But
Pochettino apparently apologised to Man United after the match for that. Apparently he said he had a word with some of his... He's been saying he's having a word with players for years, though. They're just dirty Spurs, but United look great, I have to say.
The high press is nice to see, but see if it carries through to the Premier League or if that's just a pre-season thing.
True.
Yeah. I'm just going to lay this down right now. There's no way you can have a high press if you have a team that has Juan Mata, and as much as I like Nemanja Matić, there's absolutely no way you can have a press with him in the team. And Fred, by the way, I don't know how Shakhtar Donetsk got 55 million for that lad, but I think we'd be better off putting the lad that wears the mascot at match day in on the midfield. You probably have a better time of it. To be honest, if we don't get Milinkovic-Savic or Fernandez, or potentially both, and get rid of Pogba, there's no way we're going to do better than top four. We will win the Europa League. We'll probably have a good go at the Carling and FA Cups, but realistically, with those two, if we want to be back where we ought to be, challenging for the Premier League, you need to sign those two. And I think if we do get those two, then we'll be hard-pressing City, because Liverpool will fall off, as they do every time they have their little European glory every 10 or 12 years. So I think that's where we're at right now.
I'll just chime in there for a little bit. Obviously, it doesn't look like either of those two players are going to come. If you get one of them, I'd agree in terms of the two of them change our midfield altogether. Do you know what I mean? Especially if you're going for the 4-2-3-1. You've got the two big boys in there as well, and at least Matic can do a job in certain games. You know what I mean? If you need to kind of control it, or you're trying to, if you're in the lead, he's a good option to have there to kind of keep possession of the ball. You know what I mean? But I don't see United need more than just two midfield players at this moment in time. But I like what I'm seeing from the youth, and I think that's kind of the way forward. Solskjaer, he seems to be fairly confident in the boys at the moment. So I mean, surely there's a little diamond in there in the rough that can do a better job than someone like Fred. Do you know what I mean?
I think the real question is, though, is Solskjaer on the first day of the season, is he going to have the cojones to make those big decisions?
That's it, yeah.
Or are you going to still have your Ashley Young and your Smalling and your Jones and your... Or is he actually going to put those boys in? Is he going to be picking, that midfield and that front line? Is he going to mess around with it? Is he going to throw Martial back out on the left or whatever it is and Rashford up the middle? And is Alexis Sanchez going to come in and Pereira's going to get dropped? Or, is he going to really make those decisions? Did we really see... that team that started the first half today was a very good team with a very high press and a lot of speed and a lot of really good movement. That's probably the team that should be starting the first day of the season. But in reality, is he going to risk it? Is that what he's going to do? Does he really buy into the youth? or does he just have to be saying to be doing that in pre-season?
And also, to add to that, Niall, I'll put this to the two boys, because they're obviously Man United fans. Does Solskjaer have A, the cojones, but also B, the... Does he have the you know, I guess, the freedom to not have as much pressure this season to be able to make those decisions?
It's a tough one. I do agree that the team we probably put out today for the first 45 is probably one of the stronger teams that we can have. I don't think it's the strongest we could have out there, but I do think it's up there in terms of most of those players are starters. But it's not just... You have the likes of Gomez, Garner, Chong and Greenwood. And it's not just about cojones and starting these guys. These are young guys. Mm. And if you start them and they don't perform, you get a portion of the fans turning on them. And that can have a negative effect on someone who's, you know, young, who's 18, 17, 18, 19, whatever age they are.
Ferguson had no problem doing it.
Yeah, but this is the thing. Ferguson had no problem doing it, but when he went out, he also had someone senior up there that could bail the boys out if they weren't having a great game.
Right.
And at the moment, I don't know if we have that.
When Ferguson
brought in that youth, he had a hell of a lot of very good players there as well.
He didn't just dump
in half the team either.
No.
You know what I mean? You had a lot of really, really talented players there at the time. I just wonder, the risk really is if you put them in, if you drop an Ashley Young and you drop a Lingard and you drop a Jones and a Smalling, are all these lads going to huddle in a corner pissed off and turn around and spread like cancer through the dressing room again and get to those younger guys who they should be inspiring and saying Solskjaer's not the man and all this, and then you get that mess again. That's the risk.
I don't think with those players, I think the likes of Jones and Smalling and Young, he's at the tail end of his career. He was never a defender, right? He was a winger and he was good for us as a winger, but as a defender he doesn't have the right head or the right reading of the game for that. Reading the game is different as a winger as it is as a defender. So he always had that little bit of a struggle there.
But you could also see with him today in the first half of that game, when that free kick came up, he shoved Pereira one side and took it himself.
He's a fucking prick, that lad.
Pre-season, Ted. He should be turning around to Pereira there and saying, step up there, boy, and take that. It's your time. I'm backing off a little bit, you know what I mean?
Lads, on the field, anything I've ever seen of Ashley Young, he's an out-and-out prick. I'm not saying that in terms of like his personal life or whatever he is off the field, but on the field, he's always come across as an absolute prick that's rating himself higher than he actually is. Do you know what I mean? And I know a lot of the United fans would agree with me on that.
I do get what you mean about him kind of telling Pereira, you know, step off, I'm taking it. But part of that you have to wonder is, was Ashley Young told pre-match, you know, we get a free kick in that sort of area, you're taking it.
Ah.
And you can't, but that's him bullied off.
Yeah, but that's what I'm alluding to, Ted, you know what I mean? When Solskjaer makes those decisions, you know, is he going to turn around, is he going to have that faith in the youth to turn around to the likes of Pereira or whoever it is and say, listen, Pereira or Dan James or whatever, when those free kicks come up on the left or on the right, you boys are on them. And what's the reaction going to be like? You look at Pogba today. Pogba today was absolutely absent.
Yeah,
I didn't get to see the game today. I just seen the highlights.
He was absent. Him and Greenwood were absolutely absent. I think in the first half they weren't even mentioned. And I heard later on the match analysis, they were talking about Pogba. He was this, that and the other, and he dominated the midfield. And then Dembele had him on his backside at least twice.
Exactly, he didn't. He didn't, you know, do anything in
so
that
like,
match.
I don't know what match they were watching, but the senior players today were really woeful. Apart from Martial. Martial was decent. But those young lads went out there today, Pereira, Dan James, those boys, they were outstanding.
Yeah, but Pogba was shy today.
That was against the Spurs side, a decent side. Like, I know they're a bit off on their fitness and stuff, but they're like runners-up in the European Cup last year, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well,
I just think that the majority of the problems in the midfield and around the club just stem from the fact that Pogba wants to go, and they have this task on them that they put on themselves. They're trying to keep him, whereas they should be trying to cash in on them as quickly as possible and rebuild the midfield rather than have somebody who doesn't want to be there. And don't tell me that any other top manager you talk about, Cajones, would actually bring that in to the point where Klopp wouldn't tolerate that. Mourinho couldn't tolerate it because of the situation with the board, and I feel he was let down massively. And I don't think that Solskjaer should tolerate it either. I think it should be a case of, right, you don't want to be here, let's cash in on an asset as quickly as we can and rebuild it around players that actually want to play.
I agree.
I think the problem with that, though, is if you look at United's history, they take forever and a day to sign players. So if you were to sell, let's say you were to sell Pogba this weekend, in reality, are you going to have enough time to put deals together with Woodward to cash that money in? You know what I mean? Are you going to end up with just a gap in the midfield with no Fernandes, no Pepe, no whoever, you know what I mean? No Savage, and then Pogba gone. You know what I mean?
I probably prefer that.
I think there's a risk there as well, though. Like, it's all well and good saying, you know, if Pogba doesn't want to be there, sell him, right? But where are we selling them to? That, like, you have to remember this. The likes of Barcelona, they can't buy them. They can't afford them. Real Madrid, they can't afford them either.
Juventus was a name, wasn't it? Juventus was a name that popped up or something.
Juventus wanted them, but they wanted to do it with a swap deal of players that were, you know,
surplus.
They were getting rid of. They just wanted to get rid of players out of their club. Like that, they weren't anywhere near that level. Pogba can be inconsistent, but if Pogba puts his head down and he has a good game, he is one of the top players. And I'm not someone who defends him all the time. Like, I give him a hard time when he doesn't perform, but when he does perform, he can be up there.
But Ted, that's all ifs and buts, though, if he does and when he puts his head down and blah, blah, blah. That's what the Man United fan has become nowadays, accepting mediocrity.
But I'm not accepting it. I'm just saying that you can't just go just sell him, because if someone's not willing to offer you the money,
because he's overvalued, he's not worth that.
He is worth that, though.
How is he worth that? Tell me how he's worth that.
Right.
Well, commercially, he's worth it.
Oh, so that's what we get down to then. So he's not worth it as a footballer, he's worth it as a commercial asset then.
You have the same thing with Neymar at PSG.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Look at the money. Look at Neymar at PSG. Look at Bale at Real. Is Gareth Bale actually worth $550,000 a week? Come on.
Hell no. I'll tell you one thing.
The guy plays two games in every six.
He done a good job on Liverpool in the Champions League a few years ago, though.
He did.
He plays well when he plays. Bale, that is. But it's like Niall said, it's similar to Pogba. Okay, he doesn't perform every time on the pitch, but if you do surround Pogba, and this is why he was so good at Juventus, is that he was surrounded by class. If you surround him with class, he looks outstanding.
Exactly.
If you look at that match today, take that match today. That match today was all about the youth showing what they could do and stuff like that. So what happens is, the problem with Paul Pogba is, if it's not the Pogba show, Pogba just switches off. If he's not the central main character, the main lead actor in that movie, he just switches off. If he's only a byproduct of it. Today was all about Pereira and Gomez.
Horrible attitude,
And Martial and guys like that. Pogba didn't even get a mention. And because he doesn't get a mention, he just switches off. He doesn't want to know. Whereas if Pogba was demanding that ball and creating that midfield and putting those passes through and stuff like that, it'd all be about Paul Pogba. It'd be the Paul Pogba show and he'd be amazing. And this is what he does week in, week out. He'll crop up one week and it'd be unbelievable. It'd be the Paul Pogba show. He'd be spraying passes all over the place. He'd be scoring free kicks and goals. And it'll be Paul Pogba. It'll be Pogba United.
Yeah.
But when that doesn't happen, there's no Paul Pogba. He's not that guy that's going to grow into a game. It's either his game or there's no game.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was saying about, does Solskjaer have the cojones to play these younger lads? Because when Ferguson did it, right, you had guys out there that if, say, Ryan Giggs wasn't picking up his slack, you had players out there, like Dennis Irwin would have been behind him, or you had, you know, you had King Eric in front of him. Like, you had these players out there that could do that in that game. And our senior players at the moment are Rashford, Martial and Pogba. And this isn't a knock at any of those players, but our senior players, if Rashford and is one of our senior players, the guy's 21. He's not... I know he's played the games to be considered a senior player, but he's not a senior player. Like, he should just be kind of breaking into it now. So, Martial's a bit older, so maybe, but he hasn't been at the club that long. It's a massive risk to take with the likes of Greenwood, with Gomez, with Garner, with Chong. If they don't perform, there's not somebody there to absolutely pick up that pace and do the work for them. And that's where I think Solskjaer might shy away from it, because these guys are guys for the future as well. And you can't have, you know, the heat all on them. I think Ashley Young will be starting. I think Wan-Bissaka has that right back on lockdown. And Ashley Young is just going to have to accept that he'll be coming on as a substitute for the last couple of minutes if it's needed. And yeah, I think he will accept that.
Yeah, I think what's happened as well in football, if you look at it, Ted, is football has evolved kind of in a way that, like, there's no more room for passengers anymore. Like, everyone goes out on the pitch. They're all given a job to do. They're prepped all week for a match. This is your job. No one's going to pick up that slack. You either do that job or you're exposed. And that's the way it is. No one's going to be picking up someone else's slack. And certainly not at that level. But it'll be interesting to see. It'll be very interesting to see the first start in 11 in 2 weeks for United. And whether Solskjaer really has the backbone to really put those players in and go, listen, it's your time. Like, you hear this, there's so much focus at the moment on youth and how these guys are kids and they're only young and all. But I look back at when Michael Owen and Gerrard and all started at Liverpool. They were only kids, but they were thrown straight in at the deep end. And they were boys into men very, very quickly. And they were told in no circumstances, this is how it is. This is the Liverpool way. Get on board or get out.
But it's the snowflake generation now.
He probably made his debut about 16 or 17, I think it was, or something like that. But he was unbelievable. Gerrard was the same. They were unbelievable. Now I'm looking and listening to football analysts and stuff like that telling me now how like a 22 or a 23-year-old is still a youth and he's learning his trade. And I'm there thinking, a lot of football players, their career's nearly over at 23 at times. What are you talking about?
Can I chime in there? One second, lads. We have to get
Fowler there. You know, if something went wrong, you could fall back on Fowler. Fowler will do the job for us if you have an off day. And that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that, you know, Rashford needs to be looked at as a youth player, but he's not a senior player. You can't be looking at him and going, you're the fallback. If these boys don't perform, it's on fucking you.
But I think a lot of times, Ted, the clubs allow that to evolve and they actually give the youth that fallback. They're nearly turning around to youth and say, listen, don't worry about if you fail because we have a fallback plan. And they're nearly giving them the license to nearly go out there and not express themselves the way they want. And you're turning around and go, sure, I'm only youth anyway, so if I'm not ready for it, I'm not ready for it. You know, that kind of way. The youth there, like, you look at when Frank Lampard went into Chelsea and all. It was never a case of, here's Frank Lampard, the youth, or whatever it is, and stuff like that. And sure, if it doesn't work out, we have a fallback there, then Balak or McAlealy, or whatever it was at the time, I'm not too sure. You know, he was told, this is the Chelsea way. He stepped up, and he was a quality midfielder right from the get-go.
Lads, how old is Rashford?
There was no messing around like that. Like, they were never given that excuse. So go out there and express yourself, you're only youth, and kind of, if it works out, it works out. If it doesn't, it doesn't. That was never an option.
Lads, we have to get a bit of structure here as well, because lads are shouting over each other and all. How old is Rashford?
He's 21, 22.
Jesus, John Terry was a senior at that age. Niall's actually right. Do you know what I mean? These guys, regardless of the age, he's been around for how many seasons now? Four? Someone's checking out his age anyway.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not pinpointing the finger of blame on Rashford now. What I'm saying is Noel is making a really good point. Michael Owen came on that scene as a prodigy at age 18. Do you know what I mean? Same with Fowler. It's not just Michael Owen you've got. You know, you look at United with Beckham and players like that were just given a chance. Like, the likes of Rashford now has to justify, you know, he's not a boy anymore because he's earning, he's not a boy demanding 300 grand a week. Do you know what I mean?
I do get what you mean, and I get what Niall meant as well, that if they're being told, don't worry, there's a fallback, that's wrong, that shouldn't happen.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying that back then, they weren't told back then that, you know, don't worry if you don't perform. They were told to, like, get out there and make sure you perform.
So they should be
but
now,
if
too.
If they happened not to perform, there was a fallback. They weren't told that, but there was a fallback. And now, United at the moment don't really have that. If a young player doesn't happen to, if he has an off day, like, right, he just has one day where he's not great, that can be, you know, game over for United, because this one player didn't have a good day. But that shouldn't be the way for a top team.
Everyone's talking about the age of players, right? If, I was just looking up some stats here. If you look at when George Best was 18 in the United team, he made 59 appearances, scored 14 goals.
Wow.
When we won the European Cup, it was 3 years later, he was 21, he had 55 games and 22 goals.
Wow.
So I don't understand why the likes of Angel Gomez on 25 grand a week, Mason Greenwood, who's going to be getting 25 grand a week, Tahi Chong is getting 25 grand a week. Either they're 18 and they're good enough, or you get rid of them and they end up playing for a Huddersfield or a Sheffield United or something like that. Either you're good enough to be at United now or you're not good enough now. You've been in the club since you were 5 or 6, and if you've been there for 12 years, they either see something in you that you're good enough and you either perform on the big stage or it's shit, I get off the seat time.
That's fucking spot on, Damien. Damien, absolutely spot on, and that goes for absolutely any club. It's like Hudson and Doyle there now has demanded 100 grand a week from Chelsea at 18 years old. Now the pressure's on him to perform. He's got to show next season when he's fit that he is better than Willian and Pedro. Do you know what I mean? And that's it. It's put up or shut up. And I 100% agree with Damien there. We're living in a snowflake generation now where, oh, you can't really say the wrong things to people. And blah, 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 blah. They're fucking professional athletes. There's professional boxers getting in there. Mike Tyson was 19 when he had his first professional boxing match. Do you know what I mean? And you're talking about nurturing these guys' little feelings, but we'll pay them 25 grand a week in the process. Like, come on. It's sports, guys. You know, you want to be in the sport for the love of it. If you're getting paid handsomely in the process, happy days. But the fucking fact of the matter is that you love it. Paul Pogba doesn't love football. Paul Pogba loves himself and his brand. That's quite clear. Anthony Martial, to me, looks like a player that loves his football. I'd have him as my main striker all the time. Do you know what I mean? Or give him a chance at least. These are players that aren't getting a chance. You know, for essentially, you know what I'm saying here. It's just they're too mollycoddled, and they're getting paid way too much money to be worried about how they're feeling inside. Like, there's plenty, they've plenty of money to go and see a shrink. Do you know?
Yeah. Well, I think Greenwood will start against you guys first game. I don't know if he'll start, but I think Greenwood will make an appearance against you guys in the first game of the season, whether he starts or he comes on at the 60th minute or whatever. I do think we'll see him.
Someone told me he started at Chelsea. Damien, is that correct?
What was this?
Someone told me the other day that Greenwood or one of the lads there started at Chelsea. Can you look that up?
I can.
In the boys under eights or something.
I'll look up Greenwood for
it. I know Gomez from Liverpool started with us.
I know Chong didn't start at United, but he didn't start in England.
No,
he Greenwood, didn't. No. Greenwood to United since he was 6.
Okay,
so
it's not him then. Sorry, it's not him. Yeah, yeah. No, I wasn't stating that claim. I was just asking. Because I saw like a little stat. Because I know Joe Gomez started at Chelsea. And there was someone else from Arsenal that did as well. I know Sancho was a Chelsea boy as well, but he left like at a really young age.
Speaking of Chelsea, Ian, like, you guys obviously transfer ban in place, you can't sign anyone.
It's the best thing to happen to us, yeah.
What is your, and I know you're confident in the young players, as you should be, like, some of them have really shown what they've got and what they can do.
Sure.
But what's your feelings on how you'll actually perform this season with all these new players, young players, having to make that big step up now at this point?
Well, do you know what? Having watched all pre-season, like, and as we say, pre-season is pre-season. Even Chelsea beating Barcelona the other day, I didn't get too excited. Do you know what I mean? The same way I didn't get too distraught when we lost against the Japanese team last week either. It's all about fitness and kind of finding the right formation, because Lampard has used about 3 or 4 different formations now at this stage, you know, just to find the best one. What people are forgetting is we lost Hazard, and that is correct, and Damien is a stats man there. I checked out a couple of things. Hazard is the main player that we lost. That's it, all right? If you look last year, obviously Hazard, it's not just a player. It's one of the best players, obviously, in the Premier League over the last 10 years. But Chelsea actually played their football a lot better last year in terms of what Sarri was trying to do when Hazard wasn't in the team, because the team wasn't built around Hazard, if that makes sense to you. So they had to find a different way of playing because their star man was out. What Sarri has actually done is left a certain building from the back in the way he the year that he's had there. It's not too dissimilar to what Lampard is trying to do with the high press, with playing out from the back. However, it's a different formation. It's not going to be a case that Chelsea are just playing all youth players. Jorginho is in his second season, coming into a second season now. He's looked absolutely phenomenal in pre-season. Barkley has looked absolutely phenomenal. Willian is obviously was at the Copa America. Pedro's looked good. Azpilicueta's looked great. David Luiz looked great. Zuma has come back off the tail end of an absolutely amazing season with Everton, and he's looked fucking phenomenal. Emerson's looked great. With Kante to come back, we haven't seen much of him in pre-season. Mason Mount, who's come in from Derby after you know good run in the Championship with Lampard, looked absolutely amazing. Tammy Abraham, 30 goals or something in the Championship, all overall competitions, looked brilliant. Batshuayi looked fresh. So these loan guys coming back are like almost new signings, but they know the culture of the team. So people thinking that this is just Chelsea going to play a bunch of 18-year-olds, it's not the case at all. I mean, Kovacic has looked absolutely brilliant as well. And then you've got, obviously, Hudson-Odoi, Reece James, and the main one, Loftus-Cheek, to come back from injury. So, squad is absolutely... The main thing, Ted, the main thing is that the squad is now filled with about... there's a good 8 English homegrown players there that are a core that have all come from the same upbringing, which is what Chelsea had when we had Lampard and Terry. Do you know what I mean? So...
Yeah, it's just a thing of, like, will they all... And I'm not saying they won't, because, like, I haven't watched Chelsea in pre-season, you know. They're not the team I support, so I don't go out of my way to watch them, but...
What's the noise in the background, lads? It sounds like there's machinery moving.
Will they gel in with the other lads? Or, like, if they don't gel in, that's a big task then on Lampard, who's come in as a manager and as a legend of the club. How do you feel that gel will go with the likes of Jorginho and these younger players who haven't played with Chelsea? I know some of them played in the youth together, but the likes of Jorginho didn't play in the youth with these lads.
No, but Jorginho played with Loftus-Cheek last year most of the season, so it's only one player coming in, and that's Mason Mount, and they've pretty much gelled perfectly so far. And Kovacic...
hasn't played with Joe Odoi, has he?
Yeah, of course he played with Hudson-Odoi, yeah. What's the noise in the background?
We're gonna have to
cut this podcast short soon if that noise keeps happening, because you can't hear nothing on this end. What is that?
All right. No, I don't know what.
I'm gonna stop it. Basically, right, as much as it's great that Liverpool have won their 6th trophy, that like you'll always hear about. Do you know the way? Like you always know how many trophies Liverpool have won because you'll always have a fan that doesn't shut up about it. I'm just going to not shut up about the fact this year that we're finally seeing the Chelsea youth come in. Some of them which are now playing at Liverpool because obviously their youth academy isn't as good as it used to be anymore. Or maybe it looked better back in the time when the Premier League had not much money in it. But yeah, I'm very confident, Ted.
Yeah, and Niall, how are you feeling with the fact that you haven't either haven't or aren't been allowed to sign anybody?
It's the board thing.
You know, you'd get sick all the time for their board not signing anyone, but you haven't done that in this transfer season.
It's the Mandela effect, yeah. Ted. It's the Mandela effect.
The what?
The Mandela effect. Liverpool just keep... It's like when Liverpool think they've actually won a Premier League, but they wake up and realise, oh shit, we actually haven't.
Like, you were getting that second place trophy that there was a petition started for.
Yeah, we might still get that first trophy the way that car case has gone with Man City. Don't quit it yet, lads. There's hope.
And you know what? The thing about it is,
I'd take it anyway.
You'd actually take it that way as well. I'm only messing.
But what's the story with you guys? Like, no signings, nothing coming in, or?
I think what happens with Klopp is, I think Klopp is a bit sort of like, he wants a certain type of player, and if that player isn't available, he'll just sit and wait. And he obviously hasn't seen that. I get the feeling we probably have a few in the pipeline.
but he just, Liverpool has become very good over the last few years of saying very little about what business they're doing and suddenly just announcing a signing. We don't feed into the press a whole lot. We just sort of get on with it. If you look at Fabinho last year and all, you know, we had a chat with him on the Friday and he was announced on the Monday. That's the way we do our business. And I get the feeling with Klopp, I'd say he's probably looking at it and he's going, you know, I'd be a little bit concerned because I looked at our youth there during the pre-season matches there and stuff. And that clearly, with the exception of maybe Brewster, who still needs a lot of time, the rest of them are way off the mark. Way off the mark. And nowhere near the first team squad and shouldn't be. So I'd be a bit concerned if he's holding back thinking that this is the solution or if he's thinking that James Milner can be back up for about 20 different positions. I'd be a bit concerned, you know what I mean? Absolutely. And like I'm looking at the transfer window and I think we're treating the transfer window literally nearly as if we won the league last year, but we didn't. And
I think you'd be in trouble if you don't sign anyone.
I think it's very hard to believe that you win the league, given the way the fans have behaved.
Yeah, but I mean, define being in trouble is being in trouble that you get second again and you have a good run in Europe and stuff like that. I mean, there's no doubt about it. We had a brilliant season last year. We fell short by a point and we won a European Cup. It's a pretty decent season. Okay, we didn't win the league. But like we're not that far short. We're a couple of players, I'd say, short.
I think he'll drop out of that top two. I think he'll be coming in third this
Listen,
season.
Listen, Damien actually popped in there with something. Damien, what was that you said?
I said the way their fans are going on, you would think that they just won the treble. Everything had happened. They'd signed Neymar. Griezmann had showed up by his contract with Atletico and Barcelona, whatever's going on with him, and said he wanted to play for Jurgen Klopp for 15 years. I think they live in a fantasy land. This happened in 2005. It happened again with Gerrard Slip. They don't have the mentality in a team, and they have a manager who's won one out of 16 finals. So at this point, I think what's going to happen is Liverpool will have that drop-off that they're expected to have because they don't have the investment and they don't have the talent. And as Niall said rightly, as a Liverpool fan, that they're actually patching things over with the likes of James Milner, similar to what we did with Ashley Young. And I just don't think that the signings have not been successful either. The likes of Naby Keita, who we were promised was a £70 million midfielder, looks like he's not fit to lace Fred's boots. So...
Well, I don't think that's true for starters, and I don't think you can turn around and say we've made poor signings. I don't know where you're coming from there. We absolutely have the best centre back in the world. We absolutely have the best goalkeeper in the world.
Are you for real?
And we absolutely have the best front line in the world on their day.
I don't know where you're going with that.
Don't even strum that. You're
that's ridiculous. The best goalkeeper in the world.
I'm talking about how the way our fans are going on. We're the European champions. Would you ever stop?
Yeah, you barely got across the line with a bottling team. A team that bottles it, you barely beat them.
That was the worst final I've ever seen.
I may as well have gone out and watched the boys on the park kick the ball around.
Would you have taken that final this year, Ted? Would you have taken that final?
Yeah, but they'd have shut up about it after a day, though.
What do you mean, taking it? Like, being happy with the performance? I wouldn't be bollocks performance.
No, would you, if you had won that European Cup that way this year, would you have taken it as a fan? Of course you're going to take the fact that you won the trophy.
But like that was dire, like that. And it's not just you. Spurs were dire as well. That was the worst. Like I should have gone out and watched the boys kick the ball around the park for all that match over.
Ted, you think that was dire? We lifted the European Cup.
All right.
You lost to you failed to beat Huddersfield and Cardiff to get a top four in your last two games of the season. Don't be talking to me about dire.
I'm not talking about winning a trophy, as Dyer. I'm talking about the level of play. Like, don't these two teams are meant to be the best?
Stop. So getting a spot in the top four. Getting a spot in the top four these days is like winning a trophy.
Brilliant. I love it.
Stop. You're going to play football now on a Thursday night in Oslo in the snow. Cough on.
It's good for me, though, because I'll be working Wednesday nights.
Yeah. You might work Thursday nights as well, because there's no point in watching it.
Until February, and then I'll watch it.
Yeah, you mean you'll watch it the last weekend of May when the final is on, probably.
I enjoyed the last time we ran to the Europa League final, the Emmerdale Cup final, as it's called.
We had a lovely road against Arsenal in the Emmerdale final as well. It was just nice to hockey them in, more than anything, yeah.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah,
like,
but you, yeah,
in many ways,
the only reason you enjoyed it is because you'd already cemented the top four spot. Would you ever stop?
Yeah, yeah.
In many ways,
you knew you weren't going to play Thursday night football the next season.
And it also meant that it was just another. I mean, we already won a trophy in Japan, which is another trophy ahead of Tottenham, and they still haven't won it. And do you know what I mean? So I'm happy with that. Like, I've no beef with you guys.
Yeah, I hope it works out for Frank Lampard, because if he uses this position at Chelsea to give him the springboard to return to his former club Man City as manager when Pep goes back to Barcelona, I hope it works out for him, because he deserves it, you know.
Hopefully, anyway, yeah, hopefully.
But in all honesty, like, genuinely, I do think you are going to drop into third this season. I think this lack of signings is gonna hurt you boys.
Okay, so who's going to finish in the top two then? Obviously City.
Not United, anyway.
No, not United.
United are top eight. Wolves are actually ahead of United now. Damien said that he thinks they'll win the Europa League. Wolves will beat United in a Europa League final every day of the week. Fucking Jimenez will destroy big, lanky Harry Maguire.
Well, hopefully we don't sign that piece of piss, but... honestly, with the fact that they've gone out and spent a bit of money this season, I do think Spurs are going to nip you for that second spot. And I think it's because,
Spurs will do no such thing.
The likes of Mane, Salah, and Firmino, these players haven't had a break at all. And, like, they're coming back into this season, and they haven't had a break because they've been playing... The Copa finals. They weren't playing any finals
this year. They're not Copa America. They're bleeding fucking Egypt and African.
Yeah, no, Firmino and Alisson were there.
Well, what about Divock Origi?
Copa America, and then Salah and Mane were African Cup.
You've got big Divock Origi there. Fucking, he'll do the business.
Well, that's the thing. Will he do the bit? Like, that's three outfield players and three of your best outfield players, if we're honest. And your main goal scorer and threat, those three players. And by the looks of it, they're not going to be back for the start of the season. Not all of them, anyway.
No, they're all back for the start of the season, but Mane isn't back for the Community Shield.
Is that what it is? But the boys haven't had a rest, and that. I know people say, well, they earn this much money and they're only playing one day a week and this and that. But playing football, or playing any sport, really, like, I've never played at the top level of anything, but when you're competing at any sort of top level for anything, it's physically and mentally draining. Even if it is 90 minutes a week that you have to play football, not including your training, that's physically and mentally draining. And the boys not getting a break at all. Mane, I think, hasn't had a break in, 3 years now, because he's always been off playing with his country in the off season. It's going to be a strain on those boys.
So clearly, if he's been doing that for 3 years, then clearly he's okay with it.
And
he
also,
the best season of his life last season.
You can't do it forever. I genuinely think that you're going to, either an injury is going to be picked up or the boys are going to lose steam. And I do think he's going to drop into third, and that Spurs are going to nip you for that second spot.
Well, then, by all accounts, lads...
There is no chance in hell that Spurs are going to finish above Liverpool this season.
Lads, can I just chime in there?
Did you see how they finished last season?
Jesus Christ.
I know, yeah, but Kane was out for a lot of that season as well, you know?
Lads...
He only missed 6 weeks,
Ted. Listen for a second. By all accounts, Ted, what you're saying there, if that's the case... Then Alexis Sanchez should come back and win the fucking Ballon d'Or, because that cunt has been doing nothing for the last 6 to 8 months. So he's had a hell of a rest.
Most of the teams have had players involved in those two tournaments. You know what I mean?
It was never a problem for Big Didier Drogba.
Because of that front line and our goalkeeper. But I mean, most of the teams have had players, a sprinkling of players here and there involved in that. But I don't think that'll be the issue. I think in fairness, I think tiredness will come into it. And there's no doubt about it. And that's why I've turned around. If you listen, remember the last podcast we did? I said we definitely need an out-and-out striker as backup there. One to create competition and two as backup, because tiredness will kick in. There's no doubt about it. But Ted, that's the price you pay for being successful. Look at United when they were challenging on 4 and 5 fronts every season. You know, that's the way it is. That's life at the top end. You know what I mean? You either step up or you step off.
Yeah, but when United were challenging at those things, we had more depth to our squad.
Yes.
And this isn't, genuinely not taking it as a complete knock at Liverpool. We had a better depth to our squad than you guys
did. But Ted, you rarely had any more than three or four strikers.
Yeah, but we had three or four strikers.
That's what
we have. But we were alternating. They weren't all playing every game, you know? Which is what you guys have.
I don't know about that, Ted. Go back and look again. How many times was Andy Collins with York not on the pitch? How many times did Ruud van Nistelrooy not start if he wasn't injured? How many times did Robin van Persie not start if he wasn't injured? They all started, Ted. Any time United were at the pinnacle of their success, they always played their top strikers nearly in every game. They used to do better than what most teams do is they used to alternate, because what they used to do is they used to put teams to the cosh straight away and the match was dead and buried, and then they'd sub them off and give them a rest, which is what teams don't do well these days. But that's a different time. But there's no way, if you go back and look at your top strikers over the last 25 years, they were the first name on the sheet every single time. Mark Hughes, all these guys, they were all...
It's the exact same now. It's the exact same now. It'll be Mason Greenwood, Angel Gomez, Bruno Fernandes, Milinkovic-Savic, Wan-Bissaka. We're back,
no,
baby.
But if you look at your forward line there, let's be honest there. Your forward line, if you take Rashford, Martial, Lukaku, and say Greenwood for argument's sake, those four, Martial and Rashford are going to be on the team sheet every week. Every week.
But I'm saying that if you look back at our old team, right, you're right, Andy Cole and Dwight York, the two of them, probably one of the most prolific strike partnerships that the Premier League's ever seen, right? The two of them had started up, but when we needed, if they needed a rest, what could you do? You could bring on Sheringham, you could bring on Solskjaer. You didn't have to have those two play. Now, most of the times they did, but if you guys, if Salah and Mane both need a rest in 1 week, what are you doing? That's what I'm saying. Your depth isn't there.
Right.
You need a signing.
Ted, tell me a time when Teddy Sheringham started for Man United. When the two boys were available, when Dwight York and Andy Cole were available to play and not injured or anything else, how many times did Teddy Sheringham start a match?
I agree.
I know, but the fact was that you could get subbed on. Your boys are playing the 90 minutes every time because they can't afford to take them all off.
No, we have that option there.
Divock Origi came on and scored the second goal in the Champions League final.
And we need to replace Sturridge, even though he didn't play that much, but we need to replace Sturridge. That's what I'm saying. I'm not disagreeing with you, Ted. I'm agreeing with you. I'm saying we need a striker in. There's no doubt about it. But, you can't turn around at the top end and say, geez, I'm a little bit tired. Come on.
Lads, I've got
something. I'm not saying that they're going to turn around and say that, but...
They're at a different level now. Look, it happened last year, Ted, and they didn't even have a summer tournament. The likes of Salah and Mane and Firmino, they both got knackered out around that January period when our form dipped and we started drawing a few games.
Can I chime in here?
But then Origi last season has been a revelation as well. He's come into his own and scored a lot of very, very good goals.
Lads, we got to get a bit of conversation going here because it's back and forth. Right, we're going to do something here which I think will bring a little bit of structure to it so all parties can converse here, right? Just while you were bickering there, I'm at the writing down pretty much the full fucking Chelsea squad, right? Now, you obviously know you as our squad as well. I would dare say, obviously, Chelsea are doing a three in midfield. Most teams now are doing a three in midfield. I don't believe that United or Liverpool have a better midfield here in terms of depth, right? In terms of the six players that are available, Kovacic, Jorginho, Barkley, Kante, Loftus-Cheek and Mason Mount. Without a shadow of a doubt, that midfield is stronger in terms of depth. Without a shadow of a doubt. Now, with defence, with Liverpool, I'll go with Chelsea's defence. Luiz, Zouma, Rudiger, Christensen. Attack, Batshuayi, Giroud, Tammy Abraham. Wing, Pulisic, Hudson-Odoi, Pedro and Willian. I don't believe that either United or Liverpool have as much depth in that midfield. I think you would both agree, and I think this is the conversation of depth, yeah? Because we're talking about these youth players that are coming in for Chelsea, or youth that is possibly available for Liverpool to fill a squad depth, and same with United. where is the strength? Where, like, for example, Noel, I'll put the question to you, and I'll put the question to Ted, and I'll put the question to Damien. In your opinion, one at a time, where do you believe that your strength lies? Where do you think your weakness lies? Defence, midfield, and attack.
Do you want me to go?
Yeah, Noel, you go first, yeah.
Yeah, well, our strength is certainly our back line and our goalkeeper.
Okay.
I believe we've the best defence in the league, and I believe we've the best keeper in the league. And I believe that where we are lacking is in midfield, both in terms of cover and in terms of creativity. And that's why there's so much pressure on our front line, because our midfield just simply does not do enough.
Who have you got in the midfield now? If you were to name, like, because obviously Liverpool play with a midfield three, so like.
Well, I mean, it'd be on their day, it'd probably be Keita, Fabinho, and Genie, or you'd have Jordan in there, or you'd have Milner. That's really it in terms.
You have Wijnaldum.
Yeah, Genie Wijnaldum. He said that. Yeah.
I think Wijnaldum is probably the best in that.
Yeah, I would have put him in.
Wijnaldum's nearly our best midfielder.
I think so. Yeah, I agree.
Him and Fabinho.
I think our weaknesses, I think the one thing that everyone's overlooking is David De Gea. I think that he had a terrible season, and I think that this was the time to cash in on him and play Romero. And he had Henderson there as a backup. Obviously, that's not the way the club's seen it. So just going from back to front, I would have sold De Gea personally. I know that would probably shock a lot of United fans. I think we do need a centre-half. I think Lindelof is a lock. I think Luke Shaw is a lock. I think Bissaka is a lock. I think the midfield is really where you're looking at whether or not we do have depth, because we've got a lot of bodies there, whether or not those bodies can actually perform at the level that's required to get United to where United should be is another matter for another day. So I think if you brought in the likes of a Fernandes or a Milinkovic-Savage, and you still have to deal with the Pogba problem, because Pogba is a hugely, fantastically talented player, but if you have him in a team and he's not happy... He led the Premier League in stats for walking during games of players that played over 700 minutes or something like that out of 75 midfielders. So if you look at somebody like that who doesn't put in the grift and the graft to get the United where they need to be, particularly in a pressing game, I don't think that's going to play out well for them. I also think there's massive question marks over people like Lingard and over Rashford. And then you've got other question marks like Daniel James coming in. So I think there's a lot of potential for strength, but I don't think there's actually something like Liverpool where we can say, oh, they need to add to a squad that already has depth. I think we have a lot of bodies, whether or not they'll transform and translate into actual depth on the pitch and depth on a matchday squad is up to interpretation, and we're not going to know until Halloween time. We're not going to know until Brexit happens. So I think that's kind of where we're at right now, and I do have major question marks over the likes of a Lingard, Pogba. People like Bay will probably leave. Rojo's had a very good pre-season. You've got the elder players there, the likes of the Matic's, the Ashley Youngs. I don't think that they're going to be around for too long. I think you look at Phil Jones, he got a new contract when he's clearly not at the standard. I think of the long-standing defenders that you have there, the only one that I'd probably keep would be Smalling.
Okay,
well,
Damien,
I think what's happened at United as well is you've created a culture of rewarding failure.
Well, Damien, I wanted to ask you there, right, because... Obviously, if you look at what Noel said there about the defence, Liverpool obviously have a great defence. Now, I was able to mention four defenders, Luiz, Zouma, Rudiger, Christensen. Believe it or not, Luiz was, once again, our best defender last year. He's been our best defender in pre-season. Zouma's come back and is actually better than him. So I'm pretty comfortable with the defence side of Chelsea in terms of who's there, and they're all pretty young. But I think definitely... Without a shadow of a doubt, we're covered in the midfield. Without a shadow of a doubt, I think only Man City probably have more depth in the midfield. Maybe, in the whole league. Being honest, like. Because, like I said, Kovacic, Jorginho, Barkley, Kante, Loftus-Cheek, Mason Mount. That's a really strong midfield.
Yeah. I think Chelsea are going to have a really good season this year. I think the biggest stumbling block for Chelsea last year was just the attitude of Sarri. I don't think there's any lack of talent there.
Yeah,
and the thing I like about Chelsea as well is they don't refer to their youth as their youth. You're either a first-team player or you're not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? No one dwells on the fact that, like, you know, Hudson-Odoi is a kid, or, you know, this guy is coming in and he's a kid. You're in the first-team because Lampard believes you deserve to be in the first team. And if you're in the first team, there's no chat about kids or youth. It's just you get in there and you have a job to do and you're in the first team.
And also,
and I think Chelsea, I think you could be on the cusp of Chelsea having a number of very successful years. I think you could be looking at Chelsea the way they started out with Mourinho and took a little bit of time and then hit the ground running and off they went. And if you look as well, Ian, I spoke to you before.
Yeah.
There's a number of savages going back in there to play again, and that's how Chelsea have always been successful.
Well, just to touch on that point, actually, and that's why when I actually wrote out the team, because people have been saying this, oh, Lampard, Hazard's... Everyone's putting all their money on Hazard is gone, Hazard is gone. Batshuayi, quality striker, a goal scorer, definitely. Giroud doesn't need... He speaks for himself. He can do a job. He could be a Sheringham or something, you know? Tammy Abraham, young lad with a lot to prove and a boy that's absolutely lit up the championship with better players around him. Who knows what he can do? On the wing, Pulisic coming in. Pulisic looks very good. I heard Jurgen Klopp speaking very highly of him as well because he had him at Dortmund. Hudson-Odoi, obviously, you know, a talent that we probably haven't seen at Chelsea in a long time. Pedro and Willian, obviously, they're the weak spots at the tail end of their career. Kepa looks fucking brilliant. He's very young, Kepa, but he looks like he's a young De Gea. He's definitely got the talent. So when people say to me, oh, Chelsea, you know, it's going to be a tough season, I think the transfer ban was the best thing that actually happened to us in a long time. And touching on what you said there, Niall, I haven't been as excited for a season as I was since the first time Mourinho actually came. And that is because who is bigger than Lampard? There's not one player in that squad that can cause a dressing room problem that Lampard can't deal with, because it's not just Lampard. You've got Petr Cech now back in charge of the... He's basically director of football, Chelsea man. Jody Morris, I mean, he knows exactly what... He's led a lot of these kids to three Champions League, youth Champions League titles. So the infrastructure's there. Ashley Cole's back, Joe Cole is back. Looks like Diddy might be coming back. For me, I don't see any reason why Chelsea can't be in that top four. Anyway, I think we will get top four.
Without a doubt. I think Chelsea are going to have a real good season, and I think everyone's well talking about Lampard going in and this transfer ban and all. That's all smoke. I think Chelsea are going to have a good season.
Yep.
I think if you look at all the top six, if you look at the top six teams down as far as Arsenal, I think out of all the top six teams, most of the questions that are being asked about the teams is between United and Arsenal.
And I think
they're
Wolves,
the questions where you're
good.
Questioning every single position, you're questioning every single part of your defence, every single part of your midfield, every single part of up front. Arsenal are in the same boat at the moment. They're questioning everything from the back right to the front, and there's so many questions. It's very hard to resolve all that. And, you know, I just think it's going to be difficult. You know what I mean? I just don't think there's a foundation there. You have United going into the new season on the back of what you would say is failure. You know what I mean? Because it was a poor season for them. There's no doubt about it. And, like, not a whole lot has changed. And if anything, you could say, in argument's sake, it's going to get probably a little bit worse. Because I think Pogba will go. And I think losing Herrera was huge. And I just think that's going to be a real problem. And I think bringing in Wan-Bissaka, he looks a very good signing, and I think he'll do really, really well. But those boys are going to take time.
I think I don't think Pogba will be gone by the end of this. I think he'll be here for this season. Genuinely, I don't think he's going anywhere. I think he'll be here for this season because United are just going to hold on to him. They're just not going to sell him. And whether that's a good decision or not, we'll come to see, but I don't think he's going anywhere. Wan-Bissaka, I think, is probably will probably be the best signing we make in this whole transfer window. No matter who else we sign, he'll be the best signing. And the reason I think that is because we had Ashley Young and Valencia playing right back for the last number of years, right? And neither of them are natural defenders. And Phil Jones and Chris Smalling get an awful lot of stick. And it's not that they don't deserve some of it, you know. They've had howlers, sometimes they have good games and then they have these howlers that just cost United and they do these things. But I wonder how much of that is based on that they can't just concentrate on what they're doing, because they have to concentrate on that right back position as well, because they know it's a weakness. And if that's no longer the case for them, will we see an improvement in them? I'm not saying we will or we won't. But the likes of, like, there's talk of us going in and spending 80 million on Harry Maguire. He's no better than Chris Smalling.
Can I ask you a question there, Ted, right? Just based on everything that we've seen on Phil Jones, I actually believe Smalling is the better of the two. I actually think there's a bit of a player in Smalling, to be honest with you, if he's beside the right partner. Okay? The British media love to make David Luiz out to be this calamity fucking James type player, yet like since he's come back to Chelsea, he's actually not been a calamity at all. He's been a very, very solid defender. Damien will back me up on this. You look at Phil Jones' career and then put it beside David Luiz, he's not even in the same fucking category. But you don't hear anything bad about Phil Jones because he's English. He's not even in the same level as David Luiz.
You do hear Phil Jones gets a lot of flack.
Not
to
from
be
Sky
fair,
Sports.
Like.
Not from Sky Sports. Maybe from his fans.
From the United social media, definitely.
Yeah, but not
I'm gonna be out here in 2 or 3 minutes. I have a food order that's just left the restaurant. We'll be here.
But yeah, no, Phil Jones. Whatever about which one? I think Smalling is better than Phil Jones. I think Phil Jones is just. He's too brave for his own good. Like, he gets in the way of anything. And even if it's like, Phil, that ball is going out of play anyway, like, you don't need to worry about it. He's going in, and it's an admirable quality, but it shows a lack of football intelligence to go, I don't need to make that lunge, which then puts me on a sideline for another 6 weeks. So I would prefer Smalling there, but I don't think that this idea of spending 80 million on Harry Maguire is no better than Chris Smalling. And I'm happy enough for us to have Smalling there beside Wan-Bissaka and to see how that goes. Because I do think Wan-Bissaka shoring up that right-hand side is going to make all that difference. Not all the difference, but it will give Chris Smalling a bit more freedom to just concentrate on defending his player rather than the right-back players as well.
So at the moment, Ted, you don't think you need a central defender?
I would like a central defender, but I'm just saying that I don't think that Phil Jones will look as bad this season as he has in previous seasons, because he'll be able to focus more on doing the job he's meant to be doing rather than doing the right back's job as well.
Fair point.
Interesting point.
Fair point. Yeah, no.
That was a very interesting. Hour for me, but I'm going to have to leave you at this point.
Right.
So thanks for having me on, Ian, and I shall be in touch with you soon.
Not a problem. Enjoy your food, my friend, and we'll see you. Make sure you join the Dynamo's Dozen Football League, you know.
Oh, yeah, of course. Send me all the links and all that stuff. Nice talking to you.
Talk to you then.
Take care,
Rudy.
Brother.
But, yeah, no, you don't agree? You don't think that...
No, because I think that could actually go the other way. I think you could find... very, very quickly, that you have Wan-Bissaka looking at Phil Jones and going, this lad is useless. And you might have Wan-Bissaka getting pulled all over the place, trying to cover for Phil Jones and do his job.
Yeah, it could go that way, but I'm hoping it goes... Obviously, we don't know without... You know, you can judge off pre-season only so much, because, as everyone says, it's pre-season, you know? But I'm hoping it's the other way, that Wan-Bissaka does his job well enough that the boys can focus solely on there. Yeah. Because Lindelof plays on the left-hand side of that centre-back defence. So he's actually had an actual defender on his side, which maybe that made him look better. If he had to switch roles and go onto that right side, would he have looked as good? Maybe he would. I don't know, because it hasn't been done. But
I think with Lindelof, I think he just understands his job better.
He does. He's definitely better than Smalling. Don't get me wrong. He's a better defender anyway. But I hope, and it is. That's all it is. I can't sugarcoat that in any other way. I hope that Wan-Bissaka being there and shoring up that right hand side allows us to see what Chris Smalling can do when he's not worrying about another player, rather than worrying about two players. He now just has to worry about the one that he's meant to be.
It'll either be very successful, or it'll expose him as being the player that is not up to it.
Yeah, and I think that'll help De Gea as well. I know it was said that, you know, maybe United should sell De Gea, but I don't think we should have sold him. I think part of that, like the contract, you know, he wanted a better contract, and it's hard to say that he didn't deserve it. He's been our player, his best player not last season, but for the last few seasons, barring last season, he's been our best player by a country mile.
He definitely deserved that contract, in fairness. He definitely
You know, he sees all these other players who aren't performing and who are half performing getting raises, and he's not getting one. So I can see why he, and maybe that was in his head, am I staying, am I going? But he also didn't have a great defence in front of him. And, you know, you need a good defence.
Yeah, but that's why I mentioned about the culture earlier, that like there's kind of a culture that has developed there of reward and failure. Not for David De Gea, but as you said, he's seeing other lads getting like better contracts and like not delivering. And he delivers week in, week out normally. I know he had a bad spell there, last 10, 12 games of the season. But I mean, generally speaking, you'd bet your house on David De Gea most weeks.
You would, yes. But that's the thing. I use that word hope. Hopefully, with a better defence in front of him this season, you'll see him back to his best. And with these younger players coming in, the likes of Garner, Scott McTominay, I'm hoping is going to take that central defensive midfield role away from Matic now, and that Matic will be the, you know, right, we're 1-0 up with 5 minutes left or 10 minutes left in the game. Bring on Matic as well. And just shore it up. I'm hoping that is what Matic is going to be used for. But I'm hoping McTominay is taking that role, because he's looked quality in the preseason, and at the end of last season, he actually looked very good as well. So I think that's his role now. He should be taking that. And then Pogba is going to play in that central position. Unless he's sold, he's in that position. But having the likes of James running off him, Martial, Rashford, Chong, maybe Gomez, who knows, whichever one of them plays, if they're playing well, or Pereira, obviously he's had a good season there now, and I didn't rate him before this pre-season. I thought he was a bit weak, he got knocked off the ball a bit too easily, but he seems to have put on a bit of a muscle, or, you know, he's learned.
Well, I'd say it's probably Solskjaer as well, has probably had a conversation with them saying, look, you know, turn up or ship out, basically, you know, that's the way it's going to be. And I think these boys, the reality is, they're going to get an opportunity, there's no doubt about it, and they either take that opportunity or bye-bye.
Yeah, well, my predictions for us this year is that we...
Actually, Ted, before you do that, actually... That's what I was going to do to finish off. I was actually going to say I wanted everyone's top 8 prediction, because I have mine written
top
down.
8?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, top 8.
So I'll go first if you want, to give you a little bit of time to think about it.
You go first. I just want to look at the teams and then I'll give you mine as well.
So I've gone with... I've actually, believe it or not, gone with Liverpool to win it this year. Just based on the strong backing, and I think I do base this. Okay, there's a little bit of a backstory. I do base this on similar to what, you know, everyone has said today, that they can bring in a little bit of depth, because I do worry if there's an injury to Van Dijk, where's the depth? If there's an injury to, you know, Salah, you're not so worried, because there's a couple. You know, you've got Mane, you've got Firmino. But definitely in the midfield and the defence is where I'd worry. So Liverpool, if they get a few players in, and if they're lucky enough to not get too many injuries. Obviously City second, I have Chelsea third, I have Spurs fourth, Man United fifth, Wolves sixth, Arsenal seventh, and Everton eighth. Everton could actually trump Arsenal, believe it or not. Everton could trump Arsenal. West Ham also could be up there too. They've made some really significant signings.
Mm.
West Ham signed that guy Haller off Eintracht Frankfurt, who's a really, really quality striker too. I don't know how someone like a United or even a Liverpool were not in for him. Like, he's 6'4", but he's a baller. Like, so
I'll give you mine now, I suppose. And some of this does depend on signings as well, because I've seen rumours today that Wolves are in for Sami Khedira and your man Keane from Juventus.
Yeah.
Now, like, I don't watch a whole lot of Juventus. You watch them more than me, but the game that I have seen your man Keane play, he's been very good, quick.
It looks like it's going to be it looks like it's going to be a loan sign. He is quality, man. He is quality.
So I'm going to take it that they're going to sign. I don't care about Sami Khedira. I'm going to take it that they are going to sign your man Keane, right?
Yeah.
In what I'm doing with my positions here. I think City are coming first. I think City just have so much depth, especially in that midfield. Just they're so, like, I couldn't tell you who's going to start in the midfield for City, because they have so many players that are both deserving of a start and are capable of that start. So I think this is their year. I think they have another season at the top, no matter what, here.
And they signed your man Rodri from Atletico, didn't they?
Yeah, and that's the thing. They're still making signings, and that's why I think this is, you know, they're in for, as much as I hate to say it, they're in for a run at the top, that, you know, 3-4 years where they're unchallenged. Not unchallenged, that's unfair, because they were challenged last season, but, you know, that you could nearly bet the house on them finishing first, you know. Okay. I think they'll come first again this season. I think if Liverpool don't make any signings, I genuinely do think that Spurs are going to pip them into second. Liverpool are going to drop into the third spot. Fourth, I struggle with, because United and Chelsea are both, you know, in a sort of United definitely are in a rebuilding phase. Chelsea are, you know, they're trying to build back up with the fact that they couldn't make any signings and they've lost players. But I'd say Yuzo pip us to fourth.
Okay.
We'll come fifth.
Yeah.
Arsenal sixth. And then I think Wolves will come seventh, and Watford will come eighth.
Watford, yeah, ahead of Everton and West Ham.
I think so. Yeah, Watford looked like people kind of, even last season, Watford were a good season, like a good team last season, and it's just kind of, you kind of forget about them as well. Like, they're just that sort of team that you kind of forget. Like,
yeah.
They can do a job when they need to. So, yeah, I think them coming eight.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Nice.
I'm looking at City and Liverpool being the same as last season, because, like, you know, I don't see a whole lot that has changed, and I don't see why it would be any different. And I think they just have so much more depth than us. And I just can't see us cracking it unless we bring in those couple of players, either 2 to 3 players that we really need.
Yeah.
I don't see us having the depth to sustain it, to hold them off the way we tried last season. And I think it'll be City, Liverpool, then I think it'll be Chelsea.
Okay.
With a strong showing. And I think you'll have City, Liverpool and Chelsea in that kind of breakaway group. And then you have the others. I think Chelsea will do very well this season. I think you'll have City, Liverpool, and then Chelsea. But those three will be head and shoulders above everyone else this season. Then I think in fourth, I'm going to throw a curveball in here, but I think Wolves are going to get fourth. I'm thinking this year that someone is going to come out of nowhere and grab that fourth spot, and it's going to be an unusual one.
Like the Leicester City
year? Because
there's
so many teams in transition.
Yeah, like Leicester that year.
Yeah, and that's what I think it is. Now, not enough to win a league, but enough to get a top four. And then I think in fifth, I'm going to go for Spurs, because I just think Spurs have more to offer than United do. And I think United will be in sixth. Then you have Arsenal in seventh. And I'm going to put one out here. I'm going to go for Aston Villa for eighth, because they're signing players to beat the band. And they're signing decent players as
10
well.
Players?
Yeah, that's...
10 players.
They spent 100 million, I think it is. I think I read that stat earlier. They spent 100 million. And I was kind of like, who have they signed that's costing them this sort of money?
111 million. They signed a player called Wesley, right? And this is actually a player that I had my eye on, believe it or not, for Chelsea for a long time. He's only about 23. He's a Brazilian player that I think he's even younger than 23. Sorry. He was playing in the Belgian League. And listen, the Belgian League, although it may not be up there, they produce some serious ballers, as we know. Like,
They picked up Jota as well. He's not bad.
Yeah. And then,
yeah, no, they've been very, very shrewd in their signing, and very, very quiet about it. Yeah. They've just been players in. Yeah, they've been signing players left, right and centre, and they've gone under the radar. And they've been doing some real quality business for quality pricing.
Mm.
And I think they're going to have the big point to prove this year. And I see them
at least top 10. And I would see them in 8th anyway, and they could do better. But they've bought in some real good ballers for very, very good money. And a matter of fact, our own clubs could take a look at what they did and actually wake up and smell the coffee.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
I think there's and not just for United, but I think for any of the clubs that are considered the top 6 clubs, so ourselves, like our 3 clubs, City, Spurs, and Arsenal, I think no matter if someone like Aston Villa goes looking at a player, they might get them for, say, 30 million. We're not getting them for 30 million.
Yeah.
No matter, none of those 6 clubs are getting them for 30 million because people know, you turn to someone like Villa, who've just been promoted, they don't have that Premier League money as a constant, so they can't give you any more than that. But they look at our clubs and they go, we can rinse these for another 10 million easily.
Yeah.
But then you also see a number of clubs, even in that top 6, they're still doing decent business. They're still buying players at decent money, you know what I mean? Look, if you think about it, we played 38 million for Mo Salah. That's decent money.
That's decent business,
you know what I mean? We paid 26 or something, or 25 for Mane. That's decent business. You're not getting rinsed.
Where was Salah before he was bought him?
Roma.
Roma. Yeah, Roma. He'd only had the one good season at Roma though, really, hadn't he?
Chelsea. He was with Chelsea and then they loaned him in a January, I think. So he had half a season with Fiorentina. Good second half, and then he had a full season on loan with Fiorentina.
He also had a phenomenal season at Bale before he went to Chelsea.
But that full season he had with Roma, with Fiorentina on loan, that's when Roma came in and basically bought him, and he had he didn't hit the numbers now in the Serie A, but you generally don't hit the numbers in Serie A that you hit in Spain or England.
Yeah, that's kind of what I meant, you know. And I'm not saying it wasn't good business, because it was good business. Obviously, it's good business. Yeah. He's been top goal scorer. Well, joint top goal scorer last season, and then I think he missed out the season before by 1 or 2 goals to Aguero. But he's been up there, because he was in Serie A, you know, his numbers didn't look as good. Like, you look at Bruno Fernandes, right? He's playing in the Portuguese league, and that's who we're being linked heavily with. And they want nearly 70 million for this guy. And, you know, maybe he's worth it. Like, the guy scored, I think it was 32 goals last season and 16 assists.
Yeah. I think he'd actually more, about 25 assists.
But you don't get that. Like, if he was playing in Serie A, he wouldn't have got that. So then, you know, that might knock some of the price off because you don't see those numbers. So I think which league you're buying from kind of does make a difference as well.
Definitely.
But I mean, that's always going to be the case. But what happens is, I think what happens is you get into this transfer turmoil and you're suddenly going, oh, Pepe, Bruno Fernandes, these are all flavour of the month stuff, you know what I mean? And then the price just escalates because of the media and stuff like that. And then, as you said, Ted, once United come in, that's throwing 10, 15 million on it straight away.
Yeah.
On extra. You know what I mean? So I still think the scouts have a big part to play in this. And I still think there's still a lot of value out there for a lot of really good players. And
you just need
to have the way to do it. And Villa are doing a very good job on it. And Wolves have done a very good job on it.
We spent 15 million on James. And I think he is going to be. Yeah. Quality for us. He's lightning quick. He's going to, as I said, he'll pick up those free kicks for us. He might not get, you know, the numbers in terms of assists or goals run, but he'll cause defences problems. And that's what you need.
I think he'll turn out like another one of those great Andy Robinson signings. You know, very little money, but turn out to be a proper baller.
Yeah, I think that's the way as well.
Yeah, I think it'll be the best 18 million you ever spent, actually.
In reality,
you know what I mean? But then you look at Wan-Bissaka and you're going 50 million and you're going, how does a right back at Crystal Palace get valued at 50 million? You know, they had an atrocious season. They did as a club. You know what I mean?
But then if you look at it and you say, right, we paid 50 million for him, if he's worth it as well. Like, if you get him for 10 years and he's quality for 10 years, then 50 million is pennies in the long run
Absolutely. Any signing is a risk.
Like Van Dijk, you spent 75, was it?
Yeah, 75, yeah.
75, that is insane, right? That is, right, when you just look at that, and not looking at how his season went last season or anything like that, when you look at that, when you sign that is ridiculous. That is stupid money. And he's got much abuse over it, and he's deserved the abuse at the time to have spent that much money on a centre-back. But look what he's done for you.
There's no doubt Edwards, I'm sure, at times had sleepless nights about that at the beginning.
But then look what he's done for you. And if you have him for 10 years and you say we spent 7.5, the signing was for 10 years, and look what he's done for the club. You know,
If you look at last season, you could argue he's already repaid that 75 million in one full season.
Yeah, well, how much do you get for winning the Champions League?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I think you get close to that sort of money for winning the Champions League anyway, so...
Yeah.
Well, lads, as we wind down here, wish every kind of team that were... Well, I don't actually really wish yous all luck, but I wish yous luck, and I hope we have a great season.
I hope you two do shite.
Yeah. I mean, well, I know you're going to do
shite.
But I'm going to leave this question actually just about yous. What do you think about the latest news? We'll just touch on this. The latest news of apparently Vince McMahon firing all of creative.
It's a big risk.
It's a great risk.
It could be a great risk. It could turn out poorly. Depends who he gets in.
Well, he's already got his boys in there now.
Yeah, well, he's got the two head guys, you know.
But it's basically going to be Pritchard is going to be basically working with Bischoff, so it's going to be very, very similar. Obviously, they're going to have Reuters in there. There's a couple of people, but basically, what they've done there is trimmed all the fat, taken out, you know, too many cooks. All the great stuff came from two and three minds that were all thinking on the same page. Bischoff and Pritchard are absolutely great buddies as well, from all accounts. I believe JBL might be involved in that. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. So that sounds good to me. And then obviously depending on who Heyman can work with. So it looks like Vince is very, very serious about this and letting the two boys run the show.
Yeah, the problem is, though, that where does the book really stop? And it doesn't stop with either any of those men. And it stops with Vince. And if Vince vetoes something, that's it. There's no... You know, like firing all these other writers and firing all this. He was the one who gave the sign off, the go ahead for all of this. Nothing went into that TV show. Nothing went into anything without Vince McMahon's A-OK on it.
Well, I believe, I don't know, I'm going to be a bit more positive here than we were the last time that we were talking about. I think this is literally what kills AEW altogether, to be honest with you.
If he's going to listen to the two boys, then it'll be positive. But if he's just going to overrule them...
Well, by all accounts, what I'm hearing here is that the two boys are in charge because Vince is going to be, he's basically going to be doing a lot of stuff now with the XFL. So he's going to be having an eye on it. I don't think it's going to be where he's back there all the time. I think it's a good move, lads. What do you think, Niall?
I read somewhere as well that I heard that it was actually Fox who insisted and hired Bischoff, not exactly WWE. Did I read that somewhere?
No, well, I didn't hear that, but that sounds like a bit of...
That's what I heard. What I heard was that it was actually Fox who insisted, and it was Fox that was hired at Bischoff, and that Bischoff was going to be like that Fox liaison with WWE for that show that's going to go on to Fox.
No.
And that it wasn't Vince just directly hiring Bischoff, that Fox were instrumental in it as well.
Well, I talked to someone...
That sounds quite likely. I hadn't read that, but that does sound like...
Well, I can't say too much, lads, but you know I've had a guest on this podcast before that's quite close with certain people, i.e. Bischoff and stuff like that. You know there's a podcast with Bischoff on it. So it's I can guarantee you that's all bollocks. Yeah, 100%. But it sounds like a nice story and make it look, it's just a non-story anyway, just saying it was Vince wanted him and that was it, like, so but yeah, lads, it's exciting times ahead for both football and wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we've got our start date for AEW now. It'll be October 2nd, so Wednesday night shows.
Yeah. And now there's rumours that WWE could have just NXT compete with it, which would be hilarious.
Well, NXT, I think, is already on a Wednesday night, so it's not like they're moving anything. They're just not moving it, you know?
No, but I mean, if it's a thing that NXT numbers beat AEW's numbers, then that's a real kick in the teeth, you know?
Yeah. Well, I don't think they will, but I don't think they could have gone up against Raw and they'd have got the numbers to beat Raw at the start.
The first 6 months to a year will tell the true numbers. You won't see it in the first few weeks, you know. But guys,
we'll
leave it there. This has been a great third episode. I hope the people listening enjoy it. There's probably lots of sound bites and stuff there that people are like, "What is going on here?" But it was fun. I had fun. You've had fun. That's the main thing. Guys, we'll see each other again soon.
Yeah, see you soon, guys. See you soon,
Ted. Talk to you later, lads.
See you later, boys.
Over and out. Bye-bye.